See, in a brief moment, everyone was talking about Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Josh would actually really want to see that one. So yeah, I'm down to.
Either, he keeps, like, most of these ideas are from him.
Well, then he should be here. We should just do the menu to fuck with him.
It was that one he wanted to do with you and Sarah and Ryan.
Oh, yeah. The menu, man.
It's actually not bad.
It is an example of a movie that has not aged well because I have gotten older.
Wait, that's fair. You're thinking of a different movie.
I'm thinking of Waiting.
Yeah. I would actually do want to see Waiting again because I feel like I would still
enjoy
it.
It was hilarious when I was like 18 and I saw it again a few years later. I suggested it to my group of friends.
Oh, no. That's the worst feeling.
When you, like, have the wrong friends for the movie?
Yeah, I thought that they would be down for that style of humor. I was wrong. And so when that scene comes about where, like, one of the waitresses is not wearing any panties, and as titillating as that sounds.
Is that correct? A panties?
Any panties is what he said.
Any panties. Okay. I was like, I know it's a singular thing, but we refer to it as though it's two things, so it bothers me to combine those two things.
Anyway, the grammar aside, as titillating as that sounds, the way it plays out in the scene is that she has an enormous bush. And it comes out of nowhere, and like she plucks crumbs of food out of it and like throws it at people. And so it's more like shocking and then horrifying. And again, these are friends that I had misjudged
that
they would enjoy this.
Yeah.
And so that was really awkward.
Who's that like comedian singer we used to listen to a lot when we were younger?
Oh, the Dead Puppies guy.
Yes.
Stephen Lynch.
Stephen Lynch. I don't know if I would still like him or not. That might have just been really good teen humor.
It could be, yeah. I know what we're watching. We're going to watch Bullet Train. Because I wanted to watch that, and this is a good opportunity to do it, and it's pretty popular on Netflix right now.
That's fine.
So it'll work out for everything, I think.
Thus saith the Rick.
Cool. All right. Have either of you guys seen?
Yes.
Oh, we should probably actually do the like intro stuff.
No, that's fine.
Doesn't right, work everyone's getting a peek behind the curtain since apparently we started recording before we decide what we're going to watch tonight.
Oh, yeah. Got to have B-roll. You know how that is. So I'm Rick Fox. I am an author here in Nashville, and I am a bullet train. I don't know that much about this movie.
I don't either, but Brian.
Oh, I'm just used to the
you need two people. It is still clockwise.
I'm Brian. I'm an illustrator here in Nashville, and I'm a little girl.
I'm Caleb. I'm a data scientist / analyst here in Nashville, and I don't look like Brad Pitt.
And we're opinionated.
So you don't think he looks like Brad Pitt?
I don't think I look like Brad Pitt.
Oh, that's fair. I mean, that's fair. It's a weird thing.
I wish I did, since he's been pretty nonstop fuckable his entire life.
Yeah.
Anyway, Bullet Train is a 2022 movie. It has a 54 on Rotten Tomatoes, and it stars...
Mm-hmm.
It's harder to do when you're the only person doing this. So.
Yeah, you could have recruited one of us to do the other part.
I could have, but I didn't. I should have.
Like I said, Rick is a tyrant.
I am an absolute dictator. And I star... No, and this movie stars Brad Pitt, Joey King, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Brian Tyree Henry, Andrew Koji, Hiroyuki Sanada, and many others. Oh, Michael Shannon. Cool.
Which one's Michael Shannon?
He was Zod in... the Man of Steel, Superman.
The new movie. Man of Steel or the old Man of Steel?
There wasn't an old.
Or the new Zod or the old Zod? Is Man of Steel the new Superman?
Yes.
The Jesus Superman?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, they're both Jesus. Anyway, five assassins aboard a swiftly moving bullet train find out that their missions have something in common.
So what if that was the synopsis of Polar Express?
Polar Express would be a much more fun movie.
I've never actually seen that one. That's one of the examples, like the art style.
Mm-hmm. It's so off-putting.
I could not.
Yeah.
Like, talk about Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
The dead looks in those eyes. It seemed like any second now their heads were going to like split open and there's just going to be full of teeth and it was going to gobble me
as
up.
As a kid, I thought it was real and they had just put like a filter on them or something.
Mm. I mean, that was cutting edge technology back in the day, but now, oof.
Yeah.
Now it's like when you watch the original Toy Story and notice that all of the kids that show up to Andy's birthday party are also Andy.
Yes. And terrifying.
It's because we had one body type.
Exactly. So I don't know about you guys, but the like previews for this movie made me want to see it. I really wanted to do it for the podcast, like when it was still in theaters, which just didn't work out as far as timing wise. But it looks really cool and it looks really fun. It sounds like, Brian, that you've already seen it.
Yeah, the trailer made me think it would normally be something I would like, but it wouldn't sell me on it. But then when I saw it, it was actually really solid, and the soundtrack is really, really good.
Okay, cool. This is the kind of movie where that's sort of what I want. I just want a good, entertaining time, and if I come out of it with some new music, that's a bonus.
The fucking... Who played Kick-Ass?
Oh, that's... I just mentioned his name.
Yeah, he's
Aaron Taylor Johnson.
I would never have known it was like he. It's so weird to see someone who you're used to, like when you see young actors, you expect them to just look like young actors their whole life, and now he looks like a fucking adult. And it's weird.
yeah, that's fair. Like, that's how I felt about him when I saw him like in Kick-Ass and then immediately in Godzilla after that.
Who is who's the guy who's Spider-Man right now?
Tom Holland.
I mean, like he's an adult, but he even when he gets a mustache and stuff, he's not an adult.
He's still
Tom Holland with a little mustache.
He's
probably older than me.
Whereas Kick-Ass looks like a fucking adult, grown-ass man who does bills and shit now.
that's fair. I don't know that Spider-Man will ever reach that.
Yeah,
but.
That's what I thought the Kick-Ass actor was going to be like. He was going to be like, who are those guys that are always awkward guys? Michael Cera.
Oh, gosh.
Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah, those people who just always play this awkward,
who was Lex Luthor when he shouldn't have been
Jesse Eisenberg.
Is that Jesse Eisenberg?
Yeah. Anyway, this has very little to do with this movie.
I'm now thinking about what if there is a version of Polar Express, but every character was Batista.
What if we just watched Polar Express and reviewed it, but we just said it was Bullet Train? This movie was not as murdery as I thought, and also, I don't know where Brad Pitt was in.
I miss that, I don't know who the actor is, but I always remember him as Brainy Smurf, who always plays that same character, like he's the annoying, repetitive, and he was basically the exact same character in everything he's ever been. He was in Polar Express.
Okay.
He was basically Brainy Smurf as a little kid.
Gotcha.
I don't know what happened to him, like if he died or something, but...
Probably just not a lot of Brainy Smurf characters out there.
Maybe that's just a dead archetype that people don't want anymore, but he was in everything for a while as Brainy Smurf.
You will have to figure out who that is so you can tell us.
Of all the references, Brainy Smurf. Like, you're talking about a Smurf character,
well,
right?
Well, I watched Smurfs a lot growing up on Cartoon Network, so, like, that's where I heard him the most.
It was on there a lot.
That was on Cartoon Network?
It was on several
I had basic cable, so I missed all of this stuff. You know, my experience was that I had to ask my aunt to record Dragon Ball Z on a VHS so that I could binge watch it once every couple of months.
You had a cool aunt then.
She lost interest in doing that quickly.
I'm sure she did, but the fact that she did it all is nice. But we should go ahead and start kind of wrapping up here and get into there to watch the movie.
To watch Polar Express.
Before we do that, though, we don't have a Manscaped ad to read today, which is good because I would not do a good job with it. What I will tell you is that you can pick some movies and suggest them for us for our Listener Suggestion Month. That's coming up soon, and we only have a few suggestions so far, so the more you throw in there, the better your chances are of getting one picked.
Like, when this comes out, since there's a delay between us recording and this being released, we are going to be like... actively discussing what are we going to watch for Listener Request Month.
Yeah,
so get on that shit right now.
That's right. Assuming Josh is actually back next week and doesn't have come down with like
a third sickness.
Yeah. we will be back next week with something maybe from the Listener Request Month. But until then, we're going to go watch Bullet Train. I don't remember how Josh ends ends this section. Wait. No, yeah. Go to Spotify.
All right, I'll see you later.
Also, go to our Patreon and give us some money there. We release bonus episodes, and we have some tabletop.
Rick, that is the outro.
Is that the outro? Does he mention it here?
Is that the outro?
I'm pretty sure that's the outro. What he says, like, guys, we'll be right back after we go watch Bullet Train.
Maybe you're right.
Josh, just cut that bit in, like where the ending of this is supposed to be. Cool. Bye.
Talk to me.
I am ready. You are getting the new and improved me. Because if you put peace out in the world, you get peace back.
I think you might be forgetting what you do for a living. Take the gun.
Every job I do, somebody dies. I'm not that guy anymore.
Some conflicts require a gun.
Hey, this is nice.
I tend, like, the earbuds I put inside of my ear typically, I think I might have, like, slightly small ear canals, and those can get become painful if I leave the earbud in for like too many hours.
Huh. That happens to me when I would wear them like mowing and whatnot.
Well, they do make for good like temporarily earplugs.
They do. I know because I have to use them every night, especially because I go to sleep listening to something because Robin's always listening to books, but I can't sleep if I'm listening to a book. So I have to listen to something else in my headphones, but sometimes they'll die, and so I'll just like press it in really tight and like lean my head into the pillow on the other side so that I can't hear the book. So that doesn't have anything to do with the bullet train, though. Pretty good movie. I liked it. It's not. It deserves much better than a 54. Like it's not.
I mean, it's not perfect or like
no
ball busting or anything, but it's a solid movie.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it.
It's a lot of fun. Like it.
Three of us, I enjoyed it the least.
Oh, that's a shame. What did you not enjoy about it?
I think that the writing became tiresome. The constant switching in between the references to like I'm going to therapy, yada yada yada, and then there's like assassins killing each other.
I do feel like Brad Pitt's whole bit got a little old by the end.
It's not Brad Pitt's though, it's the way the entire movie is written. It feels
how
like
it does dialogue kind of thing.
If the same guy that directed the recent Guardians of the Galaxy movies did a movie where a bunch of people die, I feel like this would be more or less what you get. Same style of humor, but like there's bloods flying over.
This does have the Suicide Squad feel to it, and that's the same thing. Like it's that guy doing a bunch of people dying. So yeah, I could see that. But to me, what this movie reminded me of is sort of low rent Guy Ritchie. It has a lot of that like frenetic energy to it, a lot of like weird interconnecting pieces that you're supposed to like forget about right up until they pop back in, like the snake does, and that kind of thing.
That really needs to be a genre because I really like that style of movie.
Yeah, I'm sure it's very difficult to like put together and make. Yes. I think that's probably why more people don't try to do it because I think it does make for a really entertaining and high energy movie, which is unusual. And I think that's part of why I like this movie so much. It feels very different from a lot of what we tend to get with movies. I think
it's very ADD.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I think that brings a lot of fun to it.
We do have a lot of characters here, and I don't think that any of them are poorly acted.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that the details do come together, I wouldn't call it satisfying, but it's kind of like, oh, okay, this was that all along. And maybe it's just Brad, like that combined with Brad Pitt's character's bad luck quote.
Mm. Yeah,
is that it? Just seems like I don't know. It's to one degree, it is a mechanic of storytelling that you're going to protect the people that are supposed to survive.
Right.
And but in this film, that sense of this is a force of nature. Mm-hmm. It is the will of fate that these people will endure despite the ridiculous odds that stand up against them, including like a bullet train. Ultimately, flying off the tracks into a Japanese village.
Yes.
And everybody on board is fine.
Yes. Is everyone? Yeah.
Everyone that matters. I'm pretty sure
all the Hinchmen
side characters
were dead
already.
Yeah. So everyone else did.
Just the goons.
They
that was the mechanism for killing the rest of the goons that weren't dead yet.
Maybe it was just an extremely safe train.
And that just becomes, it feels like, it creates the sensation for me like nothing actually matters. It's just fate deciding all of it.
Yeah.
And maybe that's one of the subtle themes of this. They do address the presence of fate in the narrative, like the dialogue between characters.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just became tiresome for me.
I think this is a movie that, at least for me, would benefit from rewatches, partly because I was a little distracted during this one. Mm.
You were absent for like 25 minutes.
To be fair, no, the first one I was only absent for a little while. I was absent for a while helping Jamie, but like I was watching it on my phone while that was going on. So like I caught all of that. But it was just the chunk sort of in the middle where he and Lemon talk. It's Lemon, right? Lemon is the black one? Okay.
Yeah.
There's Lemon, and then there's Tangerine.
Yeah.
Okay. And Tangerine is Aaron Taylor Johnson?
If that's Kick-Ass, then yes.
Yeah, Kick-Ass. Okay.
I didn't see that.
You didn't?
No.
Huh. I'd say we should do it, but I don't like those movies.
I don't think I would like it. That's why I didn't watch it.
I'm wondering if I would still like it or not. I liked it before, but I don't know if I would now.
Hmm. I really do appreciate the energy in this movie. Like I like that sense of things are constantly moving, things are constantly shifting.
Yeah.
You are always, every scene comes out with everything feeling different from where it was in the previous. And to me, that's a strong mark of good storytelling, is there's no wasted time or wasted scenes in this. And I appreciate that. I can see why the ham-handedness of like the overall fate message would be a little tiresome after a while. For me, I enjoyed that piece because I think it fit in with a lot, and it said a lot about the characters and the way that they interacted with things.
Sure.
You've got like the White Death guy who is trying to control everything and sort of does end up controlling everything in a sense for a while, but then it all backfires on him at the end. You've got the girl who is got this great good luck power, but she's kind of putting it to evil use, and it eventually also comes back to get her. I think that that is a fun aspect to the movie. And the only thing that I would really say that I don't love is basically just Brad Pitt's character, because there's never a point where I'm really invested in him. I think that he could be a little more, I don't know if I'm thinking interesting or something, but something about
his...
He's
not particularly dynamic.
Yeah, exactly. No. He kind of comes in and just cruises through the entire movie. And that's sort of the idea with
his
character.
Not cruise, like he's stumbling through these various scenes, and it's obvious that it's like fate has played a cruel joke on him.
Is it cruel, though? Because he does kind of win in the end.
It is the most unfortunate kind of good luck.
He never really gets harmed, but everything that's happening is at his expense. It's just like, oh, brother.
Yeah. It is sort of
harmed a lot. He just doesn't get killed or maimed.
None of it matters, though.
I mean, getting shot twice, Kang Magger.
That was
getting
backstory.
Shot twice, getting poisoned
twice.
Yeah,
but that counts. That's part of his fate slash luck.
He got stabbed like four or five times.
Yeah. I like that his, I don't know if this was intentional, but, well, I know the second half of this is intentional, but I don't know if like the dynamic between him and White Death is supposed to be apparent, is that White Death always kills people with their own weapons.
Oh.
But that's what made me think Brad Pitt was White Death, because everyone who tries to kill him dies by their own weapon. Every single person.
Well, talk about the mask on White Death that creates the ambiguity.
So for the first half of the movie, you only like hear about the White Death in like stories and flashbacks and that sort of thing.
Well, he punches one dude, and you see like for two frames his face, but it's fast, yeah, so exactly. It's hard to tell.
Right.
And
the point is that he has this big, old fashioned.
Oni mask.
Yeah,
like
it's
demon,
not
Japanese
samurai,
demon
it's
mask.
It's an Oni mask. Yeah. On. And so you can see that you get the impression in the backstory they describe he is Russian.
Yeah.
So he's obviously not going to be a Japanese person. But the mask on, that's the only view you get of him until his character is revealed close to the climax.
Right. Which
and so you're always
really
wondering, who is this guy?
Right. Yeah, I guess it's just like a red herring to make you wonder if someone on the train could be him. But when you see him, he's not wearing his mask. He's just... himself.
I think it's just like to build like anticipation for it.
Yeah.
I think we are maybe because we're coming off of Glass Onion, we're like looking for the mystery of,
yeah.
of it.
I don't know. I kind of wish that they had somehow made him the ticket guy.
That would have been great. I wish the ticket guy came back. Like,
yeah, he vanishes. Just,
yeah.
I'm trying to remember if he gets killed or if he just gets off the train.
Yeah,
if
but he like, works on the train. Why would he get off it? It's not going to be explained by just like, oh, all the tickets are bought. Guess I'm out, guys.
Well, someone else could have taken over his shift. He could have been early nighttime and someone could have been the midnight shift or whatever. I'm not sure.
I'm also willing to accept that like the guy who has the pool to like buy all the tickets on the train also has the ability to like pay off the workers.
Sure.
Probably.
Manhandle them off the train.
To me, the dichotomy between White Death and Brad Pitt's character is that it is interesting to see someone who is so bent on controlling everything.
Yeah.
Dealing with a character kind of indirectly that is... doesn't try to, you know, control anything,
yeah,
or at least knows
fate.
That he can't control anything.
He is constantly in circumstances that are predominantly uncontrollable.
Exactly. Well, and he also believes he can control fate even if he wanted to.
Exactly. So they are diametrically opposed in a really interesting way, and,
sure.
like, it's interesting that you have to wonder, like, would this all have played out in a similar or similar way if it had not been him specifically
yeah.
that was put into the situation?
If
like
it had been Carver.
If Ryan fucking Reynolds
I mean,
had
he,
been
he,
the one.
He's apparently either the best or the laziest assassin in the world, so he very well could have handled this a much
the
better.
The cameos yeah. in this. Ryan Reynolds is on screen for, like, 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm. That's because of the Deadpool thing that
yeah.
they do.
But,
like
Channing Tatum shows up only to, like, make... always
weird.
Ask questions about, is this a sex thing?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Then people walk off, and he's like,
well,
icon.
He's
that's
got
a, the power in his walk.
Oh, man, I
like,
just
he obviously
walk.
Wants to get pegged, but the point is, he's not a character in this.
He's not.
Despite
I mean,
being a lead role person,
yeah.
he's just here, and he's gone.
That's, maybe that's sort of the joke
maybe
of it.
I don't know.
He
did he get off the train?
Probably.
Maybe he wants
was
to
he
be
the White Death?
One of these like characters that shows up in the background of each other's movies from now on. Like they're just going to keep adding to like, I'm here for 3 seconds. Now I'm here for three
right,
seconds.
Right, right.
Like next will be Morgan Freeman or something.
I think that
I guess you become a certain level of actor and this is the kind of thing you can do now. You're just kind of like, hey, famous director, I'm in town.
You,
you
do
got
something?
A scene I could fuck around with for 2 hours?
If he got
hours?
Paid a lot for that, I'm going to be mad.
I doubt he got paid a lot for it. I'm sure he got paid.
Well, I'm fine with Chang and Tatum getting paid a fair amount. I don't think that
Ryan
the guy
Reynolds
who played...
Should...
Yeah, no.
I don't know. I mean,
he didn't talk. He just showed his face for a couple seconds.
I'm going to guess, like, because... So from what I've heard and read, it was favor for a favor, essentially.
That's what I would assume.
Brad Pitt did a quick cameo in Deadpool 2, and so Ryan Reynolds repaid the favor.
I just didn't know if those favors... were favors
like
to be there
favors.
At all, or favors were, I'll be in your movie. My favors that I'm in your movie, I'm still being paid, but I am also in your movie.
Right,
but,
right.
I don't know. I guess functionally, it seems like you can't do that a great deal within show business and not create a problem where it's always lead role people fucking around, showing up in each other's movies.
Yeah.
Sure.
And there's less space for new actors to build their presence in cinema such that they might eventually break into becoming lead roles themselves.
Yeah, I suppose that's pretty
that's
true.
Fair.
I think that it is not a terrible, like it's not that's not a terrible danger that Hollywood is in.
Right.
But
it doesn't happen too much, but it seems like it's, like I said,
yeah.
taking opportunity. From
what else
people.
Has the Kick-Ass guy been in since Godzilla? Or just, I guess, since Kick-Ass and not Godzilla?
I would have to look it up.
I feel like I haven't seen him very much, but he may have just been so fucking adult now that I didn't put it together.
Is he the protagonist in Godzilla?
Yeah, he's the, like, not Bryan Cranston, but the other one. Yeah, the, like, soldier kid, Bryan Cranston's kid. Yeah, that's him.
Huh.
I kind of want to know now that you say that, what he's been in lately. Let's see. Filmography post-Godzilla. Oh, shit, he's got a lot of stuff. It's just not stuff that... Oh, yeah. he was the MCU's Quicksilver. I didn't remember that.
Huh. Wait, really?
Yeah.
I'll be damned.
Apparently, he's also going to be in Kraven the Hunter. As Kraven the Hunter.
Huh? How's that work?
Good question. Don't know.
He was in the... Oh, wait. Kraven the Hunter's not MCU. It's probably going to be...
Yeah, it's
going to
be like the Spider-Man
the
Venomverse thing,
sure. or whatever.
Let's see. Is it? Let's see. Nope, it is going to... It is it is intended to be the fourth film in Sony's Spider-Man universe.
I figured it had to be
That's such
Sony.
A stupid idea. Like, don't just give Andrew Garfield some more money and let him be Spider-Man in your universe. Right. Like, that, I would watch that much more than I would watch a fucking Aaron Taylor Johnson Kraven the Hunter. Come the fuck on.
Now, one of the small details in this film I appreciated is that you saw cell phones frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are texting and calling each other.
Yeah.
On almost every single scene.
Yeah.
And there's only like one iPhone in this movie.
Yeah, everything
all the rest
else
of them
is weird
are flip phones from like 10 years ago.
I wonder if that's like a Japanese thing.
It.
Like maybe they just like the flip phones better there.
But a lot of them, the guys who had the flip phones were not Japanese.
That's fair, yeah. Maybe it's an assassin thing of like it's easier to trace.
I guess they could be like burner
or something.
Phones.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That would probably make the most sense to me. Although, like, it's weird that the coyote guy had like an incredible. Yeah, the wolf had a like gold plated burner phone. Like, that seems
I mean,
unreasonably
the Gucci phone.
A lot of phones come fucking gold. Like, that is one of the three colors is black, white, and gold.
That's probably fair.
Don't you miss having the opportunity to end a phone call with emphasis by slapping shut your flip phone?
I mean,
you can't do that shit anymore.
You really
have
can't.
You not seen the fold?
It's hard to like. Oh yeah, that thing looks terrible.
That's
great.
I am.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's like, what do you like? You really like it?
Yeah, I like it.
Like, you like the appearance of it, or have you used one and you're like, I really like
it? I mean, it just feels right to close your phone like that.
Okay.
And it's a good pocket size. I don't like the idea of a folding touchscreen. I feel like that can't last very long.
Yeah, like that just feels wrong to me. Anyway.
I just think the price tag on those things is absolutely obscene.
That's like all phones now.
Yeah, that's...
No, some of those are $2,000 or more.
An iPhone.
None of them are that much yet. Give it a couple years.
That?
Yeah,
it's
I'm
like
pretty sure like the really like high end.
I'm pretty confident none of
it
hit that mark.
I'm guessing like as that technology becomes easier to produce, like it'll get lower. Like technology
no,
then tends
they'll
to
add
do.
More stuff in
yeah,
there, and it'll get
there'll be some other
again.
Thing, but you'll be able
yeah,
to get your.
They'll take
your...
things away from the phone, and they'll ask more money for
yeah.
it.
Yeah, you don't need the ability to charge your phone. You throw this $3,000 phone away when it dies.
We'll give you another one. It's like a Uber, but it's a phone. But what do you call it with?
Wait.
The disposability is premium.
There you go. So who are you guys' favorites among these assassins? Because they have a lot
definitely
of like
the brothers.
You think the brothers?
Yeah.
I am.
They definitely get just about the most screen time compared to
they kind of do. Like, they're almost the main characters in some ways. Like, this is definitely an ensemble movie where, like, the whole cast gets to share a lot of the screen time, but they stand out a lot.
They get the most character development of anybody.
I do feel like, what was her name? The Hornet got very little time to
shine.
Oh, she's just, like, calling everybody a bitch?
No, she's just calling fucking Ladybug a bitch, like, at the end of every line, and
well,
then
that
like
was
15
her only
seconds
scene.
Later, she dies.
Yeah.
I think that the way that they... So there's a moment where... So she's the Hornet. She's the poison lady.
Yeah.
She, at one point, drops a syringe intentionally, and it lands in Brad Pitt's hand. Mm-hmm. And within the narrative, that is enough to infect him with a virus that is going to kill him within 30
seconds.
Yeah,
even though the plunger didn't.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, well, I mean, like, the weight might have, like,
yeah, it's,
pushed
it's
a little bit into his
hand. It's super poisoning. A tiny bit of it could
yeah.
be enough.
It, like, coagulates all of your blood just about instantly.
And makes you, like, mega vomit.
Yeah.
But Brad Pitt being the...
smooth operator.
Right. I was about to say a super assassin, but he's not, as we find out. Yeah. He's just good at his job. He takes the needle out of his hand, and he shoves it into Hornet's neck, so now both of them are infected.
Right.
And she has this antidote to it, and as she is trying to pull it out of her coat, he takes her hand and takes that vaccine, I know I said the different word, and shoves it in his neck,
uh-huh.
and then she dies horribly, bleeding from everywhere, about 30 seconds later.
While Brad Pitt is like, hey.
Can I get you something?
Can I get you some water?
A blanket?
Hold your hand? I think that that scene could be really funny,
yeah.
but there's something about it that's just a little too dark. Like, she's a horrible monster. She killed, like, a surgeon who was preparing to, like, save someone's life, and, like, she's awful.
Yeah, but
she kills
she
an entire
just
wedding
kill
party.
People. She pitched the worst poisoning in the world to do it.
Exactly. Like, it's she really does, like, deserve an awful death, but at the same time, there's something really... I think it's that I don't believe Brad Pitt.
That he actually...
cares.
Feels bad.
Yeah, like it's got a smarminess
dying
to it.
Dying in the worst way, and he's not horrified. He's just like, ooh, ah, that looks bad.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry.
It's the same sense of, like, if you see someone get into a car wreck that would, like, really suck, but, like, also you kind of have to go, so you're kind of like, okay, you're okay. I know the people, like, I can hear the sirens.
Yeah, but presumably
you've got a second leg. You don't need, we need that first one anyway.
Now that we've seen a window into what his life is like on a daily basis, I can understand that he would be a bit
jaded.
Disassociated to these situations.
Yeah, that's probably fair. He does have some weird situations right. popping
biblical
up around him.
Biblical bad luck, as they call it.
Right. But at the same time, like, like I said, it's a little too grim and not... I think I needed her to be, like, if she had, like, turned back and given him the finger at some point.
What if
there.
She said, bitch?
Yeah, something is... one last one to go out on. It needed something like that from her end to kind of, like... assuage the guilt of, like, he's clearly done this horrible thing. Like, I do like how clever he is with that, though. Like, that is smart to, like, stab her and then just, like, stare at her.
And
like,
the whole
right.
time he was, like, staring her down, waiting for her to do it so that he could take it from her.
Exactly. Like, it was a very intelligent play on his part. And he is very smart in the way that, like, he goes about doing with this stuff. Like, the choices that he makes make sense. It's not just that he has, like, bumbling bad luck and makes it through on pure that. He actually is making intelligent decisions throughout the movie. It's just, you know, the universe contrives to fuck with him.
Yeah.
I am mad, though, that the snake showed up, bit him, and that was all. Because we'd already had that problem solved.
The snake.
Right. Yeah, it keeps
and
coming
it
up.
And it was supposedly the same venom? Did they establish that?
Well, yes, because that's her snake.
Yeah,
that's what she makes the venom from.
Exactly.
But making it from the venom isn't this...
I mean, it just is the venom.
Yeah,
I
say making the venom. I mean, I don't know that she does anything other than milks its fangs and puts that in people.
Sure.
But yeah, like I really wish that had more of an effect. Like, I at least want someone to, like, come in there, see the snake don't open thing he's written on the toilet that he's sealed, and be like, nah, I really gotta pee or something like that, and get in there and then get bit by the snake. I need the snake to come back.
At that point, it's pretty late into the shit getting real for them to be like, all right, I'm taking a pee break.
I mean,
the way that they kept on coming back to the snake, it felt like the kind of thing you do to keep the audience wondering. Where is this going to come in? And the answer to where is it going to come in is that basically it's going to bite the antagonist's ankle in the climax.
Yeah.
Whether it's comic relief or it is the key to their defeat, it could be either one.
Bite him,
but it didn't.
Who?
The bad, like the the final guy, didn't
did
it?
Did it bite him during
I
that?
Think so, because like, we saw it coming out of the train, didn't we? Did we
I thought it was just like, oh, you're alive too?
Oh, yeah,
lol.
We just saw it being like,
and that's all it was. Like, it was played out so early in the movie that it felt like, I mean, sure, there are things in this that are lingering, and then they come in and they play their part, but then they come and go. This movie doesn't really climax all at once. It's got these, there's always, always things coming on and off the table.
Yeah.
And that one was more jarring than several of the other ones were, because I expected it to be more like you're saying.
It should have bitten the prince. That should have been her, like, come up.
Well, I do. I think it should have bitten the White Death, because then it's sort of like all of the assassins that he put together on this all contrived to murder him.
Yeah.
Would that then? Yeah. Yeah, basically. Because basically everyone is involved at that stage. Because if you. No, not the wolf. They would not get the wolf in.
Yeah, but he hardly even mattered.
Yeah.
I do like. I mean, like, you say that, but at the same time, it did entertain me that they told like a short story about this guy's life.
Yeah,
and like explained
from childhood.
Everything. Yeah, exactly. And then like wove it into the like moment that
they
he
went
meets
back
Brad
to his
Pitt.
Wedding so many times.
They did.
Everyone is like, they somehow positioned hoses like on set into these people's mouths to be spraying like blood vomit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it didn't look particularly good. Like, the blood out of the eyes, great. Out of the mouth, ugh.
I didn't think the blood in the eyes looked good, especially on
the
sun.
Yeah.
Because it was got all the way up to the eyelids, but didn't make it into the eyelids, so
right,
it just looked
yeah.
like face paint.
It did definitely just look like face paint. But I do like that. Like, they did like all. It's easily like a 5-minute sequence, maybe more, of them just
right.
giving his entire backstory, and then
just
he
to
just
explain,
dies
when
immediately.
He gets on the train,
uh-huh.
and he's dead 2 minutes later.
Exactly. I do like that. It also like weaves back into like this is a thing that happened between the Hornet and Brad Pitt's character. Like they intersected at this wedding as well.
Who's that famous character from like those old? I wouldn't say it's a spaghetti western, but like a Japanese spaghetti, where it's like he's got a guitar on his back, but he's also like a lone ranger kind of guy.
Are you talking about the Once Upon a Time in Mexico?
I think
Yeah.
He looks like one of those characters, because he's got his wedding
the
suit
mariachi.
On, but it's bloody from like his family and
yeah,
the wine.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, it might actually be an intentional reference to that.
That's
like,
pretty
that's
great.
Not, that would not, I
don't know.
I would not
he didn't
that.
Have a guitar case that he shot a missile out of at some point.
So that would have been amazing. I do kind of wish that he had. I wish he'd lasted longer, but at the same time, this is a crowded movie as it is. So like,
maybe he should have just woken up like everyone else who dies, except for some people.
Yeah, I was really waiting for that to happen with Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Right,
like
somehow the train collapsed, the impact at the end restarts his heart.
Yeah, something like that. Because like, it's weird enough that the brother who like has the bulletproof vest survives, but at least they give like the excuse of like, yeah, he's been shot, but also he was wearing a bulletproof vest, and the reason that like he really went down then was that he was already taken out by the
sleeping.
Yeah, he was unconscious.
Enough that normally would kill, like, apparently this dude nearly killed the last guy he gave
exactly,
sleeping power to. So it makes sense that he was in a near death-like state.
Exactly. But the son also living and also like waking up at the exact same time is really odd. But I mean, it's convenient.
It is weird
timing.
That he was lying there for like 20 plus minutes bleeding out
in the intestines.
Yeah,
which is,
well, then your poop will plug it up and you won't bleed to death.
I mean, to be fair, it does take a long time to die if you get shot in, like in the gut.
That's the worst way to die. Mm-hmm.
That's what happened.
No, I'm not an expert when it comes to gunshot wounds. So what may or may not be my impression is completely irrelevant. I did not go
to
medical
school.
Who'd
you say it
happened
to? Van Gogh.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah, he shot himself, but he shot himself in the stomach, and like it took days for him to die. Like when you do that, you either like dehydrate because your body can't take in any moisture, or you basically like poop yourself to death.
Did he
like, your
only
poop's
have
in there.
The one bullet?
I am assuming so. I don't know. Or maybe he did the first one and regretted it immediately. That is often the case with suicide.
I would have thought he'd have regretted the whole cutting off the ear thing, being like, I'm not doing stuff like that no more.
I mean, he was a little bit crazy, like actually crazy.
Yeah.
So, you know, that'll
kind
do
of like
it.
The people that wrote this movie.
A little bit, yeah. I really appreciate the relationship between the brothers, though. I think that, to me, is the thing that, in a lot of ways, holds the whole movie together. I almost wish that it was just actually them as the protagonists.
Yeah.
I think
it kind of felt like by the end of it, they were going to make him be the partner to Lemming after this, but then and I never really touched on it after
that. Well, I like that they, like, make fun of that. Yeah, like, I've got a new brother after today.
It's like, really?
No!
Fuck
what the
no!
What is wrong
and
with
then,
you?
And then, at that moment, that's right before the train crashes.
Yeah.
And when he says that line, a goon comes back to life and pulls a gun on Brad Pitt. And so this guy...
dives, yeah.
He tackles him out the door of the train, mm-hmm. which is, again, going like 200 miles an hour.
Right.
They fall off what just so happens to be a bridge crossing mm-hmm. into a lake.
Right.
A 3 to 2.5 foot deep lake.
Right.
Tops.
Which that's not even the part that's the worst. You're going 200 miles an hour. At that speed, it would be
Well, we don't know if it was at top speed.
As fast as it was going and as far as they fell, they are appreciably close to, like, whatever the top falling speed. There's a term for that.
Yeah, terminal velocity.
Terminal velocity. They're close enough to that. And at that speed, it's basically like landing
you
on concrete.
You are a rock skipping off of a lake at that point.
Bulletproof vest. When a rock skips on water, it doesn't break.
Hey, the goon survives too.
I know. He's also wearing a bulletproof vest.
That's what it should have been. Him hitting the goon, hitting the water that saved him, and the goon should have been.
He skips off. Yeah.
That's not how bodies work either, though.
Yeah, but bulletproof.
Several people do evaporate in this movie.
They do. I appreciate
how the goons get killed in some incredibly grotesque ways.
The ways that people die in this movie are really. Honestly, too fun. I appreciate that any movie that has a lot of deaths where they really go out of their way to have creative, fun deaths.
Mm. Yeah.
Like one guy just gets grabbed around the legs on the train and shoved through a skylight, but that's right where they're happening to be passing over some metal stuff over the track and it just takes the top half of his body off. There's another guy that winds up falling on, the brakes engage.
In front of the train.
He falls in front of the train, which then mows over him going still like 150 miles an hour. And he gets turned into paste.
Yeah, he is chunky salsa at best.
Have you guys seen the deer get hit by the landing gear of the
airplane? Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Normally that would really fuck me up, but when you just can't even see the deer anymore for some reason,
it just goes.
Yeah, I don't feel as bad for that. Like when the bird gets hit by the really fast pitch and it's just like a cloud.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. gosh, it is harder to empathize when it's like suddenly not the thing.
It doesn't have to feel anything.
Yeah. No, if I've got to go, that'd be a good way to do it.
Yeah. Just instantly.
Yeah, a plane landing on.
That is a novel method of execution.
Right. When I'm about to die of old age, just wheel my hospital bed out onto a runway and have that damn thing just land on me.
I know planes are fast and big and stuff, but I did not expect particles. I expected there to be chunks.
Right. I mean,
you
what's
think
the
our bodies
of this video
could
is
hold
from,
together
like,
better than that?
I mean, it was a plane recently landing, so it must be coming down from several hundred miles.
I mean, were you where was the camera positioned in relation
to the
event?
Up in the gear.
Oh, so you were seeing it front. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well,
and it's just for two frames to I would never have known what it hit if they had not told me.
Gotcha. Right. Well, I kind of want to go see this now.
I'll show it to you after.
I appreciate that. Anyway, but I do. It is frustrating to me the way that they handle Lemon because, I like the relationship that they build up between him and the brother, but I've already kind of grieved for Lemon when he comes back to life, and it's weird that they put less emphasis on that from Lemon's end towards Tangerine.
Mm. Yeah.
Because Tangerine has, a full scene of, staring at his brother, gives him his necklace, all that, and, walks off. And, it is clearly...
Well, he also shows them as kids, but they can't really show the kids scene again, so...
Right, but I mean, they
just
got,
show
like,
Lemon,
that scene.
He sits down next to his brother, who's dead, and he just screams, and everyone's like, oh, what was that?
Well, no, he tells him he's not a whatever he was telling me was. He's actually a Thomas. He's like, you're more of a Thomas anyway, and then puts it in his hand and holds his hand and then screams.
But
I thought it was a good scene. It could have been a little bit longer.
No,
it was good.
I don't have any problems with these scenes. My issue is once he comes back, but I also really like the way that he, his brother's always doing the you're a diesel and putting stickers on people, which is a stupid trait to have, but the dude plays it well. And he has put a diesel sticker on Prince, who is the chick that is betraying
on
everyone.
The back of her shirt.
And I like that, that is a continuing influence on Tangerine, because he sees that and is instantly like, oh,
and
no.
And even though he hates it, he knows like what this means to him.
Exactly. And that's a really solid way of playing all that. And they don't give anything like that to Tangerine's character once he's the one that's dead and Lemon is the one that we're kind of following around. And I wish that they had kind of like done something similar to that because it would have helped
lingering
a lot.
Homage.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's weird that we got one from the brother who ended up not surviving the movie and not the reverse.
Right.
But yeah. Well, this is kind of short, but I don't know how long it usually takes us to do our outros, and there's only three of us, so it makes sense that it's a little shorter. So, I guess I'll start on my favorite and least favorite thing. There's a lot more we could talk about this movie, I think, but at the same time, a lot of it is kind of just explaining the action.
Yeah.
And it's better for you if you go see it, because the action is probably my favorite part. Like, there's a lot of good, like, witty back and forth throughout the movie, but the action is really on point. It's well done. It's well choreographed. You can follow what's going on in a way, and it is always, like, changing the stakes of the fight itself as well as what is going on in the broader story within the train. And that's all marks of a well-crafted fight scene for me, and I really appreciate that. My least favorite part about the movie is I feel like it could be just a little tighter somewhere. Like, if you've ever seen the movie Snatch or Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, there's something about those movies where there is no breathing room at all. Things are constantly moving and changing, and it's a lot like that in this. And it just feels like, having seen those movies and seeing this, I feel like I'm seeing an imitation, a good imitation, an imitation I enjoy, but it doesn't feel like it doesn't feel like it has its own spin to it necessarily, and it doesn't feel like it's quite doing it as well
as
Guy Ritchie.
I feel like it has its own spin. I think it's just that their spin doesn't work as well when it's not like always at 11 thing, when it's just like you get time to mellow out and like have fun with the characters, which I like, but it's just not intuitive to the usual style of
It's not quite enough to overcome that impression that I've seen this movie done better already. So that's my least favorite thing about it. Overall, though, I think it was really fun. Like, I had a really good time with this. I am going to give this 3.5 sparkling water bottles that I'm going to throw at a guy who was trying to kill me 5 seconds ago out of 5. I definitely recommend you check it out. Like, it's on Netflix. Go give it a watch. Brian, what about you?
I really want this to be a word of a genre that I could search rather than just be like movies like Lucky Number 11.
I was thinking 11 just a second ago.
I feel like if Everything Everywhere All at Once wasn't the name of a movie, that should be the name of this genre.
That does have like a really solid, like, that's what it feels like is going on.
Yeah. Or what's that movie that Paul really, Memento?
I don't know about Memento.
You don't think Memento?
This is not a Memento.
This is nothing.
There's similar ideas.
I guess it's
ideas.
Just trying to pick up on little things in the movie for it to all come together.
Yeah.
Is what I would take from Memento.
Like, I think the difference is not, it doesn't have the rapid pace of these movies. Memento really lingers, but
it's more of a
I do see the similarity
movie.
You're talking about there.
What is the archetype of, what would you say Vash the Stampede's archetype is?
Crouching Tiger, or is it Crouching Moron,
character.
Hidden Badass.
Oh, that's what, I feel like that's what this guy is. Like,
a little
he
bit,
is a
yeah.
bumbling fool, but he's very proficient in way. Similar to Archer, like.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They're dumb in their own way, but when they're actually doing their job, they're really good at it.
Yeah, and it's something I've mentioned a couple times on the show. Like, I really think that competence is one of the best ways you can get a audience on the side of your character. Like, if you see them being intelligent, being smart, and the world's still, like, fucking them over, that's an entirely different experience to watching someone be a bumblefuck and succeed.
Yeah. I think my favorite part of this movie is, if not whatever this unnamed genre is, it would probably be the soundtrack. I really like the soundtrack to this movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good Japanese covers of songs that I'm gonna like
and
download
who,
later.
Like, whenever they come up with themes for, like, the White Death's theme is really good.
Yeah.
And I think the Wolf's theme was really good. My least favorite thing is probably what we've talked about, just like the kind of, well, I really like Brad Pitt, but there's also something missing from him that I would like more. I might just want to see someone else cast in that role. And
I think that would do it. Like, you need, Brad Pitt has a little too much charm, I feel like. Like, I don't buy him in this, like, almost down on his luck type of character.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel like This is the thing. Brad Pitt, to me, if there's anyone in the world that feels like they have led a charmed life,
yeah,
it's gotta be Brad Pitt, right? Yeah. Like, he's like the most handsome dude on the planet, like married to several different incredible...
But...
Yeah, there's a lot
probably
of stuff...
Pretty much a billionaire.
Yeah. Right, like the dude's absurdly wealthy, can basically do like whatever he wants in a lot of ways. Like, it is hard to look at him and be like, this guy's life sucks.
A type of charming. Like, I don't know that I would want, like, Keanu Reeves in this role. I don't think he could pull off this type of character.
Although that would be funny, too. Like, because he would just be acting like, he'd be a terrible actor.
Yeah, he'd
be great at
the
action,
the
and then you wouldn't be able to emotionally connect with what the writing required you to try to portray at
Yeah,
all.
Yeah. There's someone out there that could really pull this off.
Who
I just don't
was
think
the
him.
Guy in, who was Stifler?
Oh, no, not him.
I think maybe
you know who I would want in the role. I think I would want
Ryan Reynolds.
that would honestly work better. He'd have like a better comedic timing.
He has a better take on humor.
Fuck, who did I had someone in my thought, Brian, and you just knocked it out. Who would shit.
Jim
I'll come
Carrey.
Back to it. Jim Carrey would be an interesting one in that role. But it would just need to be someone who like you could believe has bad luck, and that's like the opposite of Brad Pitt. I'll come up with it later. And
who is the guy who plays Better Call Saul?
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
I could see him having bad luck.
I feel like it would work, have a greater probability of working if you grab someone who is British, because they have this concept, at least in British comedy, that like the British comedian is someone who is being just nonstop shit on by life. And they're doing their best to take it in stride.
I could see
oh,
that.
Well, it is what it is.
I could see Martin Freeman in this role.
What's he been in?
He's Bilbo. He was the agent.
Okay.
He's the like standard British man.
Fair enough.
When Americans need a Brit, that's who.
I mean, am I wrong? Like, if you imagine a Brit, it's going to be Martin Freeman, I feel like. He would be really good in the role, I think.
That or like Benedict Cumberbatch.
No, he would be terrible. Absolutely.
He wouldn't do well, but he's also like a token Brit.
Yeah, he is very
movies.
British.
Yeah.
Who was his handler at the end?
Sandra Bullock.
She felt kind of forced at the end.
You think so?
Yeah. Hmm. I think I heard that Lady Gaga was supposed to be her.
That would
have
been interesting.
I wouldn't have wanted either one. It's just for her to like green screen, like, look, here's my fancy new car. I've been talking to you this whole, like, I don't know. It just felt weird at the end.
That's fair. I kind of enjoyed getting to see her at the end because she has enough of a presence throughout the entire movie that like it's fun to have her pop up there.
Yeah,
she's got a buttery enough voice that it's okay. You just heard her instead of saw her most
of the
movie.
If that had been the case, I'd have preferred her just talking the whole time. It was weird for me. For her to show up at the end.
I expected the handler to be, like, somehow...
Responsible for all this shit.
Yeah, the person who orchestrated all of this.
Right, like maybe the White Death... When Brad Pitt is like, you're the one who hired us all, right? And then the Black Death or White Death could have just been like, no, that wasn't me. But
no,
or just like, she's the White Death secretary or something.
Yeah,
something.
But overall... way better than what Rotten Tomatoes 52? Gave us.
Like 52 is extremely low.
Is that
low.
Critic score or audience score?
That's a good question. Maybe it was just the critic score.
I mean,
take a look at that.
I don't see why fucking Avatar will get like millions of billions of dollars and stuff and people not like this.
That is very strange to me. Okay, no. The 54 is the
critic score.
Critics. The audience score is 76, which
okay,
I think is
that,
much
yeah,
fair.
That feels
like, that's about
very
right.
appropriate.
Yeah.
So I'm giving it a 76 out
of
5.
That's like a 3.5.
Yeah.
A little bit
more. 3.5 out of 5. Everyone loves lemons.
Okay. Caleb, what about you?
I did have a good time watching this, but there are moments that violated my ability to suspend disbelief.
Okay.
Like, here they are on this train, and they are regularly punching the shit out of each other, but they're like pausing when the stewardess walks by with a cart full of drinks, and people are like turning from around chairs and like and shushing them.
Right. Yeah.
And then they'll go right back to punching each other's lights out. And it's just a bit much. Like, we've all been on libraries. If somebody was having a fist fight, you couldn't disguise that particularly well. You could hear that shit from the second floor in the archives.
We couldn't, but we're not professional assassins.
Just quiet. They weren't being subtle. They weren't being quiet.
What about the time they used that stuffed animal on the end of a gun to silence you to open up a barricaded door that would not have been shot
open?
Okay,
no, wait. I retroactively changed my least favorite thing. It's that, because that moment was fucking stupid.
I don't get it.
That was right
after
he took a golf club and stuck it through the door and
somehow
it made
like
it impassable.
Magically jammed it through, like, straight through a door.
It made sense that it didn't make sense how he jammed it through the door, but it made sense as to why the door wasn't open after that.
Exactly.
Him shooting the middle of the door that had nothing to do with any of the
and
stuff.
And now it's open.
I don't get it.
Completely stupid.
Like, all he had
dumb.
To do was pull the thing out. But for some reason, he had to
He couldn't pull it because the head of the club is on the other side.
He had to push
it. But he could have pushed it.
Yeah, push it back in.
Something. Shoot the part of the club to where he could, like, push it through.
Anything.
I don't know.
Anything.
So anyway, I guess that's just, that is their being inclusive of the Japanese context that this is taking place in.
But it was a white lady that was shushing them.
I'm talking about the fact, like, oh, you need to be hushed on, like, there's a quiet part of the train.
I would have a hard time
imagining being on Amtrak and they're going to have a quiet section. I mean, as much as I would love that.
I mean, I think there probably would be. Like, that would make sense to me. If it's a passenger train the way that this one is, I don't think that's necessarily true of bullet trains, but
it is weird, the idea of going to a different car to go to sleep rather than just where you are, you sleep there. But I would much prefer that.
Yeah.
Well, let me know on Twitter if you've been on Amtrak and they had a quiet car.
There you go.
I'll definitely seek that shit out next time I'm in the New England area.
It was apparently like midnight to morning in here, so it makes sense that that would be nighttime for most of the, like, sleepy time. For I feel like all of them would be quiet cars at that point.
Yeah, that's fair.
My specific favorite part, probably it, sillily, is that a word?
Yeah.
Humorously enough, has to be the inclusion of all of the references to Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yes.
Despite the fact the humor of this bothers me, and that the tone combined with people dying all over the place, the way that Lemon sends and dissells that philosophy inspired by Thomas,
somehow
it works.
Uh-huh.
And particularly at that moment where he had put the diesel sticker on the back of the prince.
Yeah.
And that's how Tangerine knows, like, oh, it was you.
Yeah.
Is just chef's kiss.
And yet no one's ever able to actually fucking shoot her.
Right. Somehow she gets away with everything.
Which at that moment is so incredibly frustrating, because that right there is when Brad Pitt's character comes in and she's immediately like, he's trying to kill me, so on and so forth. Like, she's infuriatingly good at getting people to not murder
She has
her.
Legitimate good luck, whereas he has, like, cursed good luck.
Right, exactly.
Or just, like, supervillain charisma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All in all, I think that whatever the genre is that we've been talking and dancing around here, this is probably my least favorite film I've ever seen in it.
Really? Oh, that's fair. I usually like most of whatever this genre is.
So within this microcosm, that's the context in which I'll evaluate it. I think that the best I can do is 3 out of 5 fucking Bellins.
That's still pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah, that's acceptable. Well, if you guys want to hear more of our podcasts that are entirely acceptable, or maybe just fucking Bellins, you can find us at our website at opinionatedpodcast.com. You can come and search us at Opinioncast on Twitter or on Facebook. You can also send us an email at opinionatedmoviereviews@gmail.com.
Give us your movie request.
Exactly. Give us our movie request.
Give us a movie request from somebody.
Yeah, anybody. Give us your grandmother's favorite movie request. but we need some more of those for our upcoming listener request month. So yeah, the other thing you can do to help us is to leave us a rating on Spotify. That and telling your friends about us is the best way for us to get out to new listeners. So until next time,
we're opinionated.
Thanks for listening.